For decades, Carl Jung's Red Book remained the most famous unpublished book in the history of psychology. Jung refused to publish it during his lifetime, and his heirs kept it locked up after he died. The Red Book recorded Jung's visionary paintings and laid out his radical ideas for a new kind of psychology. Now, finally, it's been published, thanks largely to the dogged efforts of Jungian psychologist Sonu Shamdasani. As Shamdasani told Steve Paulson, Jung couldn't really capture the complexity of our inner lives in his academic papers, so he started the Red Book, where he wrote down his dreams and conjured up images from what he called active imaginations.
He would enter into a state of reverie in which he induced fantasies in a waking state. He would then engage with the characters that appeared and enter into dialogue with them. But critically, he would then step out of this and attempt to analyze and comprehend what had taken place.
Can you describe one of these, or maybe pick one of the images in the Red Book and talk about where it came from and how he worked with it?
One dream depicted near the beginning of the text is he finds himself in a mountain range with a youth and finds that the hero horn, and it's that of the Germanic hero Siegfried, and they find that they have to kill Siegfried, which they do, and he feels a great sense of remorse at this act. He then tries to ponder what the significance of the slaying of the hero means, and comes to think that what is required is that one has to sacrifice one's heroism, and that the failure to do this at a societal level led to part of the conflict which culminated in World War I. And instead of slaying the hero within themselves, they killed each other.
And it's worth pointing out that he started work on this book in what, 1913?
Yes.
Which was right at the dawn of World War I.
Yes.
Now, there's also been a fair amount of speculation that Carl Jung himself had reached some sort of personal crisis, and that the Red Book was, in a way, his way to work out the issues that he was dealing at a very personal, maybe a spiritual level.
The work begins with a realization that he'd lost his soul, that he had accomplished everything that he'd set out to do. He'd married, had a fulfilling family life. He had a very successful career and made a name for himself in psychology and psychiatry. But he'd lost meaning. And this is his attempt to reconnect with his soul and refine meaning within his life.
What did the soul mean to Carl Jung?
Good question. It begins with Jung's acknowledgement of all those aspects of his life which he denied.
What were some of the parts of his personality he had disowned?
For instance, he had been a thinker, so he had neglected pleasure. He'd dedicated himself to scholarly study. He'd neglected feeling.
So he'd become too cerebral, I guess would be one way you could put it.
Yes.
Now, there's another side to this. I mean, when you look at the paintings he made that are now reproduced in the Red Book, there's a lot of dark imagery here. I mean, there are monsters and demons, and I mean, there certainly is the sense that he is exploring the shadow self. I mean, whether it's his own shadow, I don't know.
Well, it is a journey to hell in which he encounters everything, as we were discussing, that he discerned in his life and realizes that these two are part of life and need to be affirmed.
Now, there's been a lot of discussion over the years about Jung's relationship with Freud, who was his colleague. And I mean, it's often been said that Freud was once Jung's mentor, and then Jung famously broke away from Freud. Is the Red Book, to some degree, a product of Jung's break with Freud?
I think there's more truth in the reverse, in that when Jung returns to his own core spiritual values, it's clear that he's moving in a universe of ideas that has little to do with Freudian psychoanalysis. And the time of his association with Freud rather took place in a period in his life of alienation. Jung himself stressed that his teachers in the first instance were the psychologist Theodore Flournoy, Pierre Janet, and the psychiatrist Eugen Bleuler. These were the people he studied with and had far greater shape on his subsequent thinking than his encounter with Freud.
Now, one thing that I should mention is this is a beautiful book. I mean, the book that we have before us now is an exact reproduction of Jung's Red Book as he created it back in his day, and it's full of incredible paintings and meticulous calligraphy. Did you realize he was such a talented artist?
The extent and the quality of the work took me by surprise. He certainly could have made a name for himself as an artist had he so chosen.
Well, and I'm trying to think of the kind of tradition that this reminds me of. I guess I almost think of the medieval illuminated manuscripts.
That clearly is one of the prototypes. The work itself looks like something that could have come out of the Middle Ages. And this has appeared in Jung's subsequent work, where he sees something critical happen in the West, namely a separation between science and religion.
So that was part of his project, to bring science and religion back together.
That's what he dedicated decades of his life to. Mm-hmm. And through attempting to develop a psychology of religion, he was not attempting to engage in theology. So he was sort of trying to separate the question of belief in the tenets of religious doctrine, but to say, look, regardless of whether these things are true or not, this is something that plays a large role in the makeup of our lives, and we need to understand it, and we need to understand what functions that it has.
Now, one of the fascinating aspects of this whole story of the Red Book is that it developed its own life after Carl Jung died in 1961, because for most of those years since then, his heirs kept it locked up. Why was his family so protective of this book?
To begin with, Jung didn't leave clear instructions. He left it in his will to his family. He clearly had decided not to publish it in his own lifetime, but he knew it would emerge into public scrutiny one day. His family had not been engaged in the publication of his works. He'd kept a strict separation between his family life and his professional life. And they suddenly were confronted with a vast literary estate of massive proportions after he died. And the Red Book had been somewhat of a taboo object. So when I came along and raised the subject in 1997, no one at that point, to my mind, who was living in the family had read it.
It's kind of an extraordinary story. I mean, you're saying that Jung's heirs had this Red Book in their possession, but they didn't know what to do with it, and they didn't understand it. I mean, it this hugely important book, but it was a great mystery. It was sort of like the black hole within all that we knew about Carl Jung.
It is a remarkable situation where you have a whole psychological movement that's had significant effects on 20th century thought, based in part on a work which no one had read or seen.
Sonu Shamdasani is a historian of psychology at University College London and the editor of Carl Jung's Red Book. He spoke with Steve Paulson.